Good morning. My name is Bridget Masango, and I'm a member of the committee representing Gauteng. Thank you.
I'm Pell Bajus. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. It's Pierre Smith representing Limpopo.
Good morning, Chair. It's Cassie Labuschagne representing
the good morning, members and staff. My name is Omi Singh. I'm representing the province of KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Colin Matila. I'm the acting CE for ESCOM.
My name is Dan Marokani. I'm the group executive acting for Group Capital in ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair and the members. My name is Simpio Makatini. I'm the DDG for Energy and Broadband at Public Enterprise.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Fred Indo. I'm in the office of the Chief Executive at ESCOM.
Good morning, members. Linda Kulusa from ESCOM, responsible for government relations and parliamentary affairs.
Morning, all. My name is Makhola Magulu. I'm the Chief Director for Energy at Department of Public Enterprise.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Elsa van Lingen, and I am not a member of the committee. I'm just visiting you. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Alred Jordan, Special Advisor to the Minister of Public Enterprises. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Arnie van Jaarsveld, former Member of Parliament, and just a member observing this committee.
I'm Loli Shozi, the committee secretary. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Eric Boskati, the corner advisor for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Mbuisi Lokabu Bonsi Mativas, member of the committee.
Sometimes it seems like that because I can't explain before we start because of the issue.
Well, Honorable Chair, I think first I must start by apologizing for the late dispatch of the document. It was by no means intentional. I think we only got to know about this meeting quite late ourselves. And there was some effort on our side to see if we can reschedule the meeting or check if there's any room for rescheduling. So that when there wasn't, we had to move all our other meetings. And I think that delayed the actual dispatch of the document. But we don't think this will be
I can't understand this. Can you repeat? You wanted to postpone the meeting. This meeting.
No.
Because of their schedule.
No.
And I'm saying,
the Honourable Raymond Gordon is here.
I think we only got notice of the meeting on I think Thursday.
Last week Thursday.
Yes. And we were then trying to say, is it possible to match this meeting with another meeting that was already happening here in Cape Town with one of the portfolio committees. And that was not possible. But we worked on the document and ensured that it was out on Monday.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want to suggest that we allow the presentation, but then after the presentation, we ask them to excuse us for a few minutes whilst we discuss as members and the committee staff and decide on the way forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was also suggesting that we confirm with the individuals who are responsible for sending the invitation out when exactly it was given out, so that we are aware of where the problem is, so that we can attend to that specific problem.
I think, Chair, the suggestion by Honorable Kai, I want to second that.
Thank you. I'm going to deal with it like in that manner. Thank you. I'm immediately giving over to the department to start your presentation. Thank you. Who's going to lead us with the presentation? CEO.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation is going to be in two parts. I'm going to deal very briefly with the demand and supply balance as requested, particularly as we go into the summer season. Then Marukani here is going to deal with the main presentation relating to the update on our build program covering all three construction sites. So mine is going to be fairly brief and possibly quick, but we'll still be able to give more details should the honourable members so require.
Thank you.
Okay. First, as an overview, we just need to point out that we, as a country, we have a very tight system, and we have been having this tight system for a long time. We will continue to do so until we bring in new generation capacity. It does become worse during winter and also sometimes during summer for different reasons, and it will continue to remain tight going forward. We are going to increase our actually, as we go into the summer season, from around 9% of our generation fleet, taking it up to just over 10% of our maintenance. We also have to cater for a lot more shutdowns and longer outages because of three of our stations that are, that require almost midlife refurbishment will be out. We also need to indicate that as we take out our fleet on maintenance, it therefore reduces availability of energy and therefore becomes imperative for us to manage load. So we would have to implement certain load reduction mechanisms in terms of the protocols that are applicable. So this is just an overview of the state of affairs we are in. Just taking you slightly back to where we come from, the winter period, we were able to manage the winter peaks despite a very tight system. We were able to, as we indicated in our winter plan early in May, we were able to reduce the partial load losses from 3,500 to about 1,000, and we intend to further reduce those so that we make available more energy than losses. We have connected renewable IPPs during the 2014 year, bringing the total to just over 1,000 megawatts. We have also extended certain supply levers to augment our capacity shortfalls, including extending the SITP, that is the Greco contracts, to another 2 years. We still have a challenge in terms of our generation performance. Our unplanned outages are still unacceptably high, and we are working on ensuring that we reduce those by sticking quite strictly to philosophy maintenance, as well as going through each and every of our power stations to ensure that all the components are serviced. We have 87 coal-fired generating units out of our 13 power stations. I've indicated that some of them require a major surgery, and four of them are actually in a critical condition. Just next slide. Coming on to the summer profile, I've indicated that for different reasons, the winter profile peaks between 5 and 7. And we have been able to manage that peak through additional capacity and manage the load reduction. But the summer peak profile is quite different. It's sometimes referred to as the Table Mountain profile, because the demand is constrained throughout the day, as you can see between the 6 o'clock and the 8 o'clock. That's what it is at its high and fairly straight. And this is primarily because it is in summer that we do most of our maintenance. So we take out most of our plants all day long for a number of days, depending on how long a unit is required for repairs and maintenance. So that's why this profile is constrained across the entire day. You will see that we will still need to rely on residential corporation to try and manage that load, including calling on South Africans to switch off electrical appliances, air conditioning, geysers, pool pumps, and a whole host of other equipment during the day that is not necessarily required. And then you see as I go on that we will also be looking at revoking other supply and demand side measures to try and manage the system as we go on fairly aggressively in the acceleration of the generation performance through dedicated maintenance and repair. Just the next slide, there you see the best case assumptions that we're making looking forward to the summer period is that we are still projecting 1.3% growth of in our sales volumes over this period. We are using a plant availability factor of 75.5%, which is an equivalent of our energy availability factor. We are not envisaging a requirement to connect new renewables during this period. We know that we are going to window period 4 for the renewables, and we are already strengthening our transmission lines to be able to enable that connection to the grid. But we don't envisage a requirement for connection during the summer period that we are going into. We are using fairly expensive fuel to augment our capacity shortfalls. We are using diesel to fuel our OCGT plants. We are aware that we will continue having to use OCGT plants, but we are also looking seriously at the other fuel alternatives to offset the high cost of diesel. And we'll use OCGT within the limits of the approved corporate plan. I have indicated that we have contracted other supply levers to obtain an additional 600 megawatts. We are maintaining the current demand levers. We are also making an assumption that we will have the first unit of MIDI be synchronized this year, coming into full commercial operation in the winter of 2015. We have indicated that we are going to have to go into managed load reduction, and that this will not go beyond stage one, that is, we will not shed load beyond the 1,200 megawatts at any given time. Going forward, we have indicated that we'll continue with maintenance. There's a block there which is a bit small, but that color legend indicates that the green, yellow, orange, and so forth, that's an indication of the shortfall that we will be under at any given stage. For example, the brown is really a almost crisis point when we require over 4,000 megawatts to augment our shortfall in capacity. We don't want to go there at all. We envisage that there could be instances where we operate within the purple band where we need between 3,000 to 4,000 short of capacity. But we intend to still be able to operate between orange and red, which is between 1,200, 2,000, and 3,000 megawatts of shortfall in capacity. Now, this is again because of the high maintenance work that we intend doing during the summer periods, where we are consciously and on a planned basis taking out units for both scheduled and routine maintenance. Next slide. Just going again on the summer risk. We are aware that there will still be increased variability due to partial load losses. We still have load losses at Matimba, which just over 1,000 megawatts. We hope that we'll be able to bring that down. Coal quality is becoming an important risk factor across our generation plants, and we are looking at it both in terms of the quality of the coal as well as the coal stock base that we require, particularly during the summer periods, where we are also likely to experience wet coal, depending on the climate as predicted. But we have taken precautions to ensure that the occurrences of, I think it was 2008, which led to protracted load shedding, resulting amongst others from wet coal, that this are not repeated. And specific logistical arrangements have been taken to ensure that we minimize the impact of consistent and persistent rain that then impacts on our coal. I've indicated that we are increasing our coal stock base, particularly at those four stations that have been victims in the past. We are looking at the risk of outage management capability, where outages take longer than planned. We are almost babysitting the contractors to ensure that the units and components that have been taken out are brought back on time and in working conditions, at the pain of heavy penalties to contractors that do not keep to that contractual obligation. We have the risk of fuel being insufficient for our OCGT plants. And this is a risk that we'll have to manage in terms of when do we use those OCGTs optimally. I've indicated the risk of continuous and persistent heavy rain. There's also another risk that we do not necessarily have complete control of, and this is the Kabora Basa hydro power that provides about 1,500 megawatts for us. It is consistently tripping, and it's very unreliable. So we sometimes have to actually not take it into account when we do the calculations of our energy availability because of its unreliability. But we need those megawatts, even more so in the summer period. We are continuously engaging with the Mozambican counterparts to ensure that there's sufficient engineering capability on standby at the plant for any unforeseen trips, so that we reduce the outages as well from there. There's also an inherent and continuous reputational risk of load shedding, as well as the economic impact of that load shedding. And this is one area that we will have to manage quite tightly. We have even gone as far as ensuring that we put in place a communication system that would give some predictability to consumers as to when there's going to be a reduction in the load for their areas. And I'll talk more about that in the next few slides. These are some of the options we have put in place to close the supply gap. I've indicated some of this, and then we currently are looking at closing an additional 500 megawatts from the TSP and some of our renewable. renewable energy plants that have come into operations since the beginning of the year. That should give us some cushion to offset the capacity shortfall. I think we have indicated the need to constrain our usage of diesel to power the OCGT plants. Then we continue to do this.
You know, I find it a bit difficult because I don't know what OCGT is standing for. And I see there's a lot of things, but for me,
my apologies, Chairperson. This is the combined gas plants that we use for peaking purposes. They are fired by diesel. The OCGT is
It's an open cycle gas turbine. It's just a technology, and I think in simplistic terms, it's just our diesel fired generators. Located,
We will make sure that we put the full name, Honorable Chair. And maybe I should also go on to indicate then that the EAF is the energy availability factor. The UCLF is the unplanned capability factor, load factor, unplanned capability load factor, which refers to the load that we lose as a result of breakages that are unplanned. A reflection of the state of the health of our asset. And then PCLF is the opposite of that, which refers to planned load factor, which where we consciously take out a unit for planned maintenance. I think those are the basically the three terms that we have been using, Chair, just to indicate the state of our generation fleet. We have indicated that if we have to reduce the load, this will have to happen between 6 and 10 o'clock in the evening. There will be a campaign to communicate with consumers to both inform but also to educate on how to preserve energy during summer, which is different from the campaign that we ran during the winter period, where we were campaigning on pitching the peak between 5 and 7. Here we have to campaign on ensuring that we remain energy efficient throughout the day and switching off across the day. There are also other measures that we are looking at, which includes getting our high energy users to shift their consumption from during the day to the evening, so that we are able to get more and sufficient power during the day. So the production schedule of this mining companies and big energy users, we are engaging with them to shift their production schedule to give us additional power during the day when we are tight in terms of our system. This is over and above the other levers that I've indicated, supply levers that we are putting in place to ensure that we are able to augment the capacity shortfall that we are going to experience. Consciously, as a result of our aggressive effort to rehabilitate the health of our plants, this in effect then means then that those days of keeping the lights to maintain the health of our plants rather than drive them down at all costs. Lastly then, Chair, we have been engaging with the regulator to ensure that the reduction methodology that we are looking at for the summer period is within the allowed protocols, and this we are getting the necessary cooperation with the regulator. This would mean, amongst others, that we will be able to have week ahead outlook of the system, and we will be able to communicate that to the country, but we will get as close as possible to a day ahead to communicate if we are going to reduce load and in which area and by how many megawatts and for how long. So we are looking at various ways of communication. We have already started that through SMSs, amongst others, or in addition to our usual communication of weekly outlooks and so forth. We are also communicating directly with consumers who are our customers, where there's going to be an outage, whether it's just a normal outage or where there's going to be a reduction in load, managed load reduction. This is the campaign that we will be going on. We need to emphasize this, that we are doing this in the interest of the country, and that we will not sacrifice the integrity of our grid. We don't want to reach a stage where our grid is pushed to the edge of collapse. So we are going to protect that integrity almost at all costs. The cost of managed load reduction is far less than the cost of a blackout, a countrywide blackout that impacts, whose impact is much longer and more destructive than the managed load reductions that we want to effect. So we will continue to ensure that in the interest of ensuring that there is supply, that we continue to use all available levers, both on the supply side, inclusive of the OCGTs, as well as on the demand side, inclusive of all the measures that are required to be taken to become more efficient and to change the culture and the behavioral attitude of our consumers in terms of how we treat electrical components. And this is going to be an effort that would require support from everyone, from government, from consumers, both business and residential. And we are confident that the program that we have adopted to accelerate the recovery of the performance of our generation fleet will indeed bear fruit. And we'll be able to preserve that asset for a longer future than what is the case now. Thank you.
Thank you, Excellency. The next one, how are we going to deal with this? Can we do the whole presentation and then... Okay, thank you. Over to the next presentation, please.
Can I propose that we put a time limit to questions and deal with it? Otherwise, it's going to take... to be a lot of presentations, and in the end,
no questions. Thank you, Honourable Member. We already dealt with it. Okay, you came a bit late. We allocated time, so we are watching the time here. Thank you.
Chairperson and Honourable Members, thank you very much. The the second part of our presentation entails the the build section of our business. It involves both the generation capacity and transmission line construction. So if we can just move to the first slide over there. And in the first slide, Chair, we try to sketch a picture of the build activities that have really been part of our program since 2006. They involve, at the simplest level,
the rehabilitation of the old mouth ball stations that we call the return to service stations. A number of these, three of them completely have been completed, Chairperson, and the State President has opened two of them officially already. That gave us about 3,700 megawatts. The second part of the build program involved new programs. The nuclear new build, we have done quite extensive work already in the long lead work that requires to deal with the site surveys and so on, and to enable the country when it makes the decision to move on to not spend a lot of time redoing the engineering studies. We've also done a lot of projects in the primary energy space to build more rail lines and road rehabilitations in the Mpumalanga cold areas. Of course, topical in the base load, which will be key to today's presentation, is the construction of both Midupi and Kusile. And in Gula, we've got picking programs that are also running. At the end of this year, we will be up along the west coast here to have the wind station of Sera finished up. And we've done quite a number of projects like the open gas cycles, the OCGT we referred to in Mossel Bay and up in Ankerlech, just outside Atlantis. These have all been a portfolio of construction projects we've been doing since 2006, as a means of capacity to both generation and transmission. We've also undertaken a number of refurbishment programs, Chairperson. These are programs intended to renew the life of the existing units because it's cheaper to renew those than to go start from scratch and build completely new units. We're doing a lot of transmission lines crisscross in the country, the intention being to strengthen the capability to distribute power to the different areas and to build in the redundancy so that in the event that one line has got a problem, you don't have customers frustrated at the one end, but you have a separate route in which you can transfer the power through to them. Key issues, Chair, the second half of this year is the targeted time for bringing online the first of the major new builds, Midupi Unit 6, and I'll talk specifically around it, and I'll talk about Kusile as well, and Ingula. The next slide, Chairperson, is a pictorial view of Midupi Power Station. You will see from your left the two big structures already clad in white painted coverage. That's the first one on the extreme end, Unit 6, followed by Unit 5. And you can see Unit 3 structure looking a bit more solid and dark, and Unit 4, 5, and 6 also coming up. When all is done, all those units will constitute the full six-pack. Each one of this is 800 megawatts of power generation capacity. Our biggest current units can do just under 600 megawatts. So we've really pushed the limits in terms of the next stages of where we're going. When we talk about Unit 6, Chair, and its synchronization date, we talk about the first of those units on the left hand, and subsequent to that, all other units will come on online. Next slide. Chair, it's important to reflect on some of the critical focus areas for the build program in view of the commitment to the country of bringing this unit online in December. We've had and we just came out of the long strike in July from involving the metals and engineering sector unions. That brought some reduction in the labor forces that we saw on our construction sites naturally. We are back in operation since the strike has been off, and during that period, in order to protect the schedule for Unit 6, we've had to reallocate labor forces from the different units to Unit 6, but we've also had to take labor forces from Kusile Power Station just outside Delmas to go through to Midupi to do most of the critical work there. And I'll share with you the schedule in the next two slides. Suffice to say that our milestones have moved from being on 6 months, on 1 year terms, to really being on weekly basis or short durations. We have finished the boiler chemical clean already last week Friday, sufficiently a few days ahead of what we had planned to do. Our biggest focal point now is to introduce fire into that boiler, to introduce fire using heavy fuel oil, and subsequent to that to introduce fire from the coal that is already piled up outside the station. All of this as part of the incremental steps to producing electricity from the turbine in December. I've spoken about the additional resources that we have had to move around, and as part of our ongoing activities, we now have to deal with the issues of how do we recover overall from the additional power, the additional resource shifts that we have had to do also focusing. This is how we're managing the program now, Chairperson. We have broken it down to key activities that lead to the first synchronization. I need to explain first synchronization is actually at that point where the turbine is turned under pressure of steam and it produces electricity into the grid. The electricity that will produce into the grid will not necessarily be the maximum electricity that the turbine is rated at, which is 800 megawatts. It will be anything above 45, which is the minimum we shoot to 10. And the intention is to ramp up the turbine to full capacity within a period of about 3 months and stable commercial operation by the period of May, which is what the chief executive was indicating, that full commercial power will be by the winter of 2015. So those activities are each very critical steps in terms of getting the plant ready for operation. Mechanically, the construction is really finished. The commissioning has been taking place now in the last 3 months. All key equipment, pumps, systems, control systems, all been tested up, because all of them have to act in unison, in sync, in order to make the system as a whole work. We're running the site now 24/7. We're running the site 24/7. We brought in all the bottlenecking support that we require. We are babysitting the contractors. We are giving them supervisors on top of their supervisors to make sure that we get the right productivity levels out of the way. Of course, as we do this, we build in capabilities now for how we're managing our construction activities going forward, because each and every of these activities is really breaking in new frontiers and also dealing with some of the challenges that we perhaps as a country underestimated in as far as our ability, the ability of our contractors to execute the work to the level that we require. And we're in a space where we have to do something more than just waiting on them to figure it out on themselves, besides just putting penalties on them if we need to see the stations completed. So we're extremely hands-on in as far as managing them. The next slide, Chair, gives you some pictorial views of the station itself. It's highly progressed. It's quite an industrial complex. And as we go on into the next stages of bringing the one unit into production, we need to also begin to focus more on the integrated existence of a live system, workers working on one live system and working in other not live systems, because then you can start having safety issues coming on. So we're really mobilizing also our generation colleagues to assist in the right culture for safety at both the sites. The next slide, Chair, is the overview of the Kusile project itself. Kusile is a replica of Medupi. It is some 1 year, 12 months behind Medupi in construction. We had to halt this project at some point in 2010 because of uncertainty in funding. And as a result, it is lagging Kusile Medupi quite slightly. It is also progressing quite well, Chair. We are targeting the first unit synchronization in the second half of 2015. So they're literally running one behind the other. And the key issue as an organization is to ensure that we actually pay our school fees once, that we don't have the current problems at Kusile that we have suffered from at Medupi. And so in our management of our teams, we're doing very deliberate, detailed cross-learning and insight sharing from the execution of both projects. This site was also affected by industrial action. I think at Kusile we had more than what we saw at Medupi, with a lot of unprotected strikes from the civil contractors. Chair, I must indicate that in the history of these two projects, the recent strikes have been the most peaceful and strange as it is, most organized in terms of the partnership agreement that we have between labor, organized labor, and contractors, and ourselves as the main employer, has yielded results in the sense that there are protocols of how to behave. So we have not seen the violence that typically accompanied these strikes before on this project, and we have ways in which we deal with disputes of this nature where contractors and their organized labor that are affected are taken off site to resolve their issues before they come back, because that way you don't contaminate the whole site and have it under tension. The biggest issue at Kusile that we're working on at the moment is developing the alternative plan for the control and instrumentation system. The control and instrumentation system, which is all the computer system that controls the operation of the plants, was problematic at Midupi. And we figured it's quite too late in the process in as far as the capability of the contractor is concerned. Now what we're doing at Kusile, we have developed a parallel process that buys us plan B in the event that we have to make the switch over. And we've got very stringent milestones we're watching of the contractor. And very soon we'll actually make decisions based on progress made to date. This allows us not to lose time as far as the schedule progression itself is concerned. The second thing is around productivity overall. The productivity that we see of our workforce under the supervision of the contractors on our site is not what we require to maintain the schedule of these projects overall. It then calls for us to change the construction methods, to change the ratios of supervision. In some instances at Kusile, we have changed contractors. We have replaced contractors who are not performing with others. We have brought in additional skills where there are gaps, and we have become much more closer to the contractor than we would ordinarily have been, because they are naturally paid to deliver, and when they don't deliver, we suffer a much more bigger impact than the penalties that we levy on them. And for that reason, we have gotten much more closer to our contractors and influencing the decisions that they make, and we're having one such engagement in the next 2 weeks. This engagement, Shepherdson, are driven very high up in the organization through the chairman of the board and a strong support from the board committees in looking at this. So you'll see in the next slide that we require a step change in as far as the productivity of Kusile is concerned. We have seen the step change in the interventions that we made since December last year. It is not enough, it's not at the level that we required, and we're now going to be pushing up for the next level through additional supervision. The main contractor in this instance has got a new partner on board that has got extensive construction experience, and we are pooling and more of their resources at supervisory level, because the issue is really more at the supervisory level to ensure that work is planned adequately, material and resources are available on time, and the labor force is directed adequately on what to do. Otherwise, you have labor force that is waiting for instructions or equipment or not knowing what needs to be done differently. And this is the areas we're targeting our contractors to focus on. The next slide is an indication of the intervention around the control and instrumentation. We are beginning to look at this from a fleet approach in as far as what have we seen at Midupi that was painful to us? What are the early signs that we're seeing at Kusile that we should act much more faster than we acted at Midupi? And what are the options that we need to be developing in parallel? So we're already having some engineering work, design work being done in parallel, so that at the point where we decide that the current contractor is not adequately delivering at the pace we would like, we are able to do the switch without any risk. And that period will be reached now in September. In September, in terms of our decision-making process. Chair, there is another station, the pump storage station down in Ladysmith. This is a station where last year, sadly, we had 6 fatalities as a result of an accident in one of the tunnels that connect the upper dam on the mountain on the Free State side to the lower dam in the KZN side. This tunnel is drilled through the mountain, and we had some of the working platforms lose their anchorage and roll down and killed six of our employees there, and injured seven of the of their colleagues. These tunnels have been closed since then. Work has been happening everywhere else on site, but we are now, together with the DMR, who is the authority in this area, working on new work methods of safely doing the work again, new work methods that will require to take a little bit more time in executing it, but more safely. And as a result of that, we've seen a shift of the first synchronization at Ngula from this year through to next year in the second half. And Chair, we're progressing quite well. We're comfortable with the work that we're doing now. Increased safety focus, we've brought in more resources to help staff in execution of work at the interfaces, especially in areas that are high risk. The inquiry as far as the incident is concerned, in line with the Mine Health and Safety Act, is ongoing. It's actually in week number 4 now. The inquiry will take a recess and we'll need a further 2 weeks to conclude. So all statutory processes in as far as that incident is concerned are underway. So that's an indication of now where the units will come into place. The first one being Unit 3, so it's in yellow, it may be difficult to see from there. Unit 3 followed by Unit 4 and 5. The bulk of the civil works, which is mostly mining related activities at the site, will be completed by the end of the year. And soon thereafter, which is maybe depicted better by the next slide, soon thereafter we'll be doing most of the couplings on the surfaces in the hole, and hence the productivity curve shows a big sharp increase towards the final point, simply because the nature of the work in that last phase is really hooking up, coupling up things, as opposed to the drilling and more of the structural work through the difficult rocks in the mountain at Ngula. The last part of our build program chain involves the transmission projects. Transmission projects are very important because they are the backbone of the capacity to distribute power to different customers. If you were to think conceptually in terms of the road analogy, your transmission networks will typically be your freeways, and your distribution networks will be your small roads that go into town and residential areas. The strength of your freeways allows you to connect more of your smaller towns and to also give much more firm power, such that you don't have power losses when you are having lightnings and small rains coming through, as experienced in many of our people's residential areas that were not electrified properly in the past. So this is typically one of the transmission sites that we are setting throughout the country, and at the back of this we are able to supply much more firm power through to the residents. Most of the Eastern Cape's problems around the Mthatha areas in particular will begin to go away because we have now commissioned one of those sites in those areas that gives much more better capacity in that area, and we continue to do the same in Limpopo, in the northwest, and in the lines coming through down to the Western Cape. These are the targets. Suffice to say that in as far as the number of kilometers we have to build per year, also the number of substations we have to build per year, we are comfortably doing those. We'll meet those targets. In the last 2 years we've exceeded those targets. In many respects it's been due to the resolution of the land access and servitude issues that were a big problem, and with the department, our shareholder ministry, we have gone a long way in solving some of this, also linked up with the planning that we had to beef up on internally within the organization. So that's the issues. Chair, just the last slide on the key issues on the projects. It is common cause now that these build programs, both Medupi and Kusile, were topical with welding problems. We have learned painfully a lot of lessons around the welding issues. We continue to deal with the backlog of some of the welding issues that were done in 2009 at the earlier stages, but we are comfortable that we are now fully understanding this problem and managing it for Kusile and managing it for the remaining parts of Medupi as we go on. And we have to remain vigilant. We have moved from quality assurance, which was just oversight, to now not trusting our contractors and doing quality control in line to ensure that we don't have reworks and delays. Again, similarly on the control and instrumentation, we have gotten into a mode of doing parallel options whilst we aggressively monitoring our contractors themselves. These are world-class contractors who are supposed to be knowing what they're doing, and it's very clear that the quality of the contracting fraternity out there has suffered, which requires customers, clients themselves, to have different ways to mitigate the risk, because the big costs do come back to the clients in the end. So if we want these things done and dusted, because we need them so desperately, we also have to go into a little bit more into the kitchen and put pressure in there with additional measures. Safety is still a key focal point. Both Medupi and Kusile safety performance are the best in the entire ESCOM. And they are very comparable, world-class in terms of projects of a similar level. So we continue to focus on safety with our people in these projects. The Ingula incident was quite unfortunate, and for that reason we increased the capacity for safety supervision and inspections at the sites. We have seen progressively improvements at Ingula to date, and we will continue to move down that line to ensure that Ingula also comes to the level that both Kusile and Medupi are at. Chair, that concludes the slides on the bill program overall, and I think we will go into the question, please.
Thank you very much for that information. I think I'm going to allow speakers and the honourable members now to ask questions. And I think I wanted to raise it here. Honourable members, we ask them to come and do a presentation on that, those two, Dupi and what's the other thing, man? To say that. Because in my mind, I wrote a lot of questions that I want to ask. But I think you will be able to generally refer maybe if there is questions, ma. But I just want to make our honorable members aware that we ask for this presentation. Thank you. I'm going to give over for question time. Honorable Rahai, and then Honorable Pakis.
No, just to remind you, Chair, that we had agreed that we allow for the presentation by ESCO, and then we ask them to excuse us for a few minutes whilst we discuss the
deal. Okay, can we? I almost forget. Can we? Think we can call them in, and I will inform them about our decision. That's all. So then they can go back and we will deal with it. Thank you. Thank you, members. The officials is in. I think I want to start by saying to inform you about our decision, the committee's decision on this. I hear about late information in August, but we adopt the program on this previously. So it has been sending out to the departments. Now I'm not going to have a hearsay and a who is to blame and whatever now. The long and short, the committee decided not to go to proceed with the questions. Reasons, therefore, is that we noted that not saying it is so, so, but it seems that the minister is not taking the select committees of the NCOP seriously. Because in all the previous presentations that we had with other departments, either the deputy did attend or the minister. And I think it's the third time that we are meeting now, or the second time. And I know that she has a bus, otherwise she has to communicate to us when, if she is not going to be available on that date, when we requested her to come. But in short, we are not going to proceed because obviously there's certain questions that you might not be able to answer. That the executive is the accountable person of, from our side to ESCOM. So therefore, thank you for your time. We took in consideration the money spent for this trip, going into it, but it's about time that we as committee want to feel that people take us seriously. Thank you. Not saying it is, but it is now how we see it now, the members. Last night, we had a, when yesterday, past three, when these documents came out, we had a plenary. Yeah. And I didn't speak. Other people have other responsibilities in chairpersons, whoopery, wara wara. So they only received their documents when last night by 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, whatever, odd of this morning, not going to their offices this morning. So they were not be able to went through it, and therefore are we disadvantaged. Our members not for doing what they're supposed to do. Our work is to really see that implementation is taking place, where there is challenges, that we ask the relevant questions and get the information to be to assist. We are not here to say what we can make proposals. It might be that we also have things because we're working within the communities with sensitive things, and we cannot now ask those questions to you. And Minister was, I then say, but who gave you the who give you the opportunity, the right to go and talk about A, B, C, D, and E? So therefore, I think we are going to postpone this meeting until we and give you a new date. I don't know if any other member want to say something on this. Members, honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to add on that note that I think it is important that the delegation from ESCOM also understand that in the future, please, that we do get our documents in time for proper preparation so that we don't need to do this and waste money in the process.
Thank you. Anything from your side, Acting CEO?
No, there's nothing, Honourable Chair, just to thank you and Honourable Members, and we will be available when you next call us. And if there's anything we need to do in addition to the documentation, please let us know, we will augment it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. That's amazing in the journey. Thank you. You can go, but we have to still, remember, do our other business, the other points on the agenda, the adoption of the...
some kind of intervention. haven't got the technology. Call it. Call it. Look at it.